Arbitrum has finally announced the long-awaited airdrop. Is it Layer 2 season? Are we finally here? Can we say that? Bankless Nation, it is the third Friday of March. David, what time is it?
Ryan, it's the Friday Bankless Weekly Roll-Up where we cover the entire weekly news in crypto, which is always an ambitious endeavor, yet we persevere nonetheless into the frontier with an airdrop this week. The frontier has brought us an airdrop. We found an airdrop. Big one.
We got one. One that was much anticipated, guys. We're going to tell you about the Arbitrum airdrop. It's happening. And we've got all the details. Mm-hmm. We're also going to talk about some of this fallout from this little banking crisis
that seems to be going on.
It happened after we recorded the last roll up, and it's been going on until then. So we'll talk about that. Now maybe the contagion has reached Europe. David, what else are we covering?
The New York attorney says that Ether is a security. But should we even listen to them at all? Gary says staking is also security-ish. We have to listen to him a little bit more. The CFTC says, hold up. So we'll talk about all those details. And then sad news out of DeFi protocol Euler. It was a big hack, $200 million DeFi hack from a beloved bear market building team. So we'll cover those details and more. Make sure to like and subscribe, rate and review wherever you are listening to this, whether you are listening to this on the podcast or on the YouTube. Hit that like button, hit that subscribe button, and share it with your friends and family to help those who are not yet on their bankless journey go bankless.
Speaking of going bankless, David, this is a question for everyone in the Bankless Nation who is listening right now. Are you a bankless citizen yet? David and I told you about the release of our new website, bankless.com, last week. I think we must have said it about 10 times. We're trying to hit our quota of a dozen. Launched last Friday. Fantastic. Getting a lot of great feedback from the community. What the section I have open right now is our Just for Citizens section. So if you were listening
citizens
to this
only, if you will.
And you are not a citizen, there's an option to upgrade and become a citizen right now. One thing I'll draw your attention to is something that drops at the time you're listening to this, it should drop today. That is our airdrop guide. All right. Every month, we issue an exclusive airdrop guide to all bankless citizens that contains some alpha. It's our best guesses on which airdrops are happening next. And they're still happening. People said the airdrops were dead. Not the case. Mm-mm. We just got probably our biggest airdrop
of the year.
The last long time.
Yeah.
Just happened this week. And the airdrop guide has a whole bunch more. I don't know, there's a few dozen anyways. And so if you missed out on Arbitrum, or even if you got the Arbitrum opportunity, there are more opportunities to unlock because, as we always say, David, crypto pays you to learn about crypto. You use some of these protocols, you implement the strategies, and you can be eligible for these in the future. Potentially, these are just our guesses. Anyway, citizens get access to this.
Our track record's pretty damn good, dude. Our track record's great. Yeah.
And
you
definitely
hear about it in the feedback inside of the Bankless Nation Discord. Like, the Bankless Premium subscription is designed to pay for itself. And this is just one of the many ways in which it does that.
Here we go. Let's get to markets, David. The price of Bitcoin this week, we up or we down?
We are very up. 15%. When's the last 15% green week that you've seen in Bitcoin? We started the week at 21,650, and that was before we dumped. So right when we, this always happens, Ryan. We concluded the weekly roll up last week.
Right about here, right?
Right about there is when we recorded. And then that big red candle happened, and then it went down even more, and then it resurged all throughout this last week. So we started the week at like 21,600, hit a low of below 20,000, which is not a number we want to be below. And then as soon as this banking crisis resolved itself Sunday night, Monday morning, Bitcoin had a massive run, a 20 to 25% run inside of half of a day or something.
Look at this.
Yeah, below 20,000 to almost 27,000. We are currently at $24,700, up 15% on the week from where we started at 21,000. So it's one of the most volatile weeks in crypto price action probably of the year, ending the week positive over the last 7 days by up 15%.
So as is tradition, I'm sure by the time you hear this, we'll be down another 15-20%.
I was joking, after that candle down, like we need to just change this section. It's like, all right, Bankless Nation, please pull
open
out
your charts.
Open your price checker. That's the price of Bitcoin.
Recite Bitcoin to yourself. Recite ETH to yourself. Yeah. Insert here. How about ETH price? That tells a story, though, which is different than Bitcoin. It's also up as you'd expect, but not up as much.
ETH price starting the week at $1,530, fell down to below $1,400, moved up almost to $1,800, and now is at $1,660. So a very volatile week. Overall, up 8.5% on the week. Bitcoin almost doubled the appreciation of Ether this week.
David, can you believe that? Let's get to this chart. Yeah, this is the ETH to Bitcoin ratio, and I'm wondering if you're a little salty about this or
I'm
if you're feeling okay.
I'm perhaps a little bit salty about
this. Look at this ratio, man. Uh-huh. So Bitcoin, of course, appreciated much faster than the price of Ether this week, and so that means the ratio goes down. Down
6%. So it actually was like doing really, really well. We almost got up to 0.074. We were down to 0.076, which is a huge move for the ratio. We're used to dollar moves, Bitcoin versus Ether versus the dollar, but the ratio does not usually move much. I don't remember the last time the ratio moved 6%, but down below 0.067. So we are touching the lows of the recent times now.
Look at this. I'm learning to become a charter on Kraken Pro, and I'm just zooming
Thanks,
out
Kraken.
To see.
You're doing, I'm doing God work here.
Yeah, you've really helped. Kraken Pro, of course, Bankless sponsor, our favorite place to go chart and to exchange
coins. Ryan's only place that he charts. The only place that he's been able to
do it. It's great, though.
So we haven't seen this lows in the ETH Bitcoin ratio since the Three Arrows Capital liquidation back in June.
Wow.
And the reason why the Ether price was so suppressed then was because Ether is just used as the collateral of the internet, just in DeFi and across, even in Solana, right? And so when Three Arrows Capital liquidated itself and many others, Ether had so much sell pressure and it bounced right back above that. But now we haven't seen lows since then. So,
So this chart really tells a story. I think this might be one of the stories of the week. Why did Bitcoin appreciate so much relative to Ether? It's not like some catalyst event happened for Bitcoin. This is all on the back of these bank runs and the resolution of the bank runs. But Bitcoin appreciated more, almost double.
Yeah.
Ether, why?
Yeah, I think that's right. I can only really explain it by the banking crisis. And I think the very simple take is that, banking crises, banks are collapsing.
Bitcoin's bad, Bitcoin good.
Yeah, right. And whether or not this is new capital who are like, the banks are collapsing, therefore I'm going to warm up to Bitcoin now. I don't know how much capital is coming to that conclusion. The other take is like, the traders of crypto are like, other people are going to think that, and therefore we're going to buy Bitcoin because people are going to think that, banks collapsing, therefore Bitcoin. I think when something so big in the trad world that proves out crypto's use cases happens,
Bitcoin,
I think the simple take is like, buy Bitcoin. That's my only explanation. That's my only take.
Let me throw another take at you. I don't know if this is later in the agenda, but Binance's reserve fund, their insurance fund, the Binance insurance fund that they've been stacking dollars in. Usually, it has been denominated in stablecoins. CZ announced that Binance is going to, I don't know if they've begun this yet, David, but is going to, rather than denominate this insurance fund, if an exchange is hacked or something goes wrong, the Binance bailout fund. He's going to move that from stable coins into Bitcoin and ETH.
Yeah.
And could that be a front running of that, or could that be that sort of activity?
I don't know. I mean, over in the long term, if like we just bounce off of this low, because like we haven't broken down lows back down to the Three Arrows Capital liquidation levels. If we just bounce back up, then this will become noise.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how to interpret this.
What are you doing? Are you still holding that ratio trade?
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I've held my ratio trade down way below this. I've held it down to 0.05.
You're not worried.
I held it through the Three Arrows Capital liquidation.
Look,
by the way,
you did.
Your boy's not here for the short term.
Narrative traders are excited right now, but David continues to hold. Yeah. How about the global crypto market cap? How are we doing?
$1.125 trillion.
Wow.
Up bigly. We almost fell below a trillion, but we have not.
Yeah, so we're up about $100 billion just on the week. Kind of nice.
Casual.
Let's talk about CPI, inflation. Got to talk about the quote-unquote real economy. No, it's not the real economy. I guess this is the traditional economy, the non-crypto economy. Yeah. Inflation. So the long-awaited U.S. CPI numbers, that is the consumer price index numbers, came in. What are they reading? Annual inflation down to 6%. So recall over the summer, we were at like 9%, 8 or 9%, something like this. And then CPI grew less the last month. So that would be the month of February than in January. It grew less by 0.4% than February and less by 0.5% in January.
So my interpretation is that the core inflation is down, and it's down a predicted amount, not above or below that predicted amount. Is that the interpretation?
It seems to be kind of in line with what analysts expected, maybe down a little bit more than analysts expected, but like nothing surprising here. So the market wasn't reacting to this week. It was all bank crisis time. You have a take about inflation here for us?
So if I ask you to tell me how to feel about this, your answer is you got nothing?
I mean, nothing new, right?
Tell me how to feel about this, Ryan.
inflation is, I think, trending the downwards. Same story. Trending downwards, but also is probably more persistent than the Fed or anyone else wants to admit, and is probably still not going to be pushed downwards by monetary policy any further. So I'm still in the camp of like, 2%? Nah, that was for the 90s.
Right.
We got like some 3-4% new normal, maybe like a 5%. That's still the camp I'm in, but we'll have to see where things go. And, you know, we've had macro folks on the podcast like Lynn Alden, who I consider very good in this area. And she talks about, hey, the next 10 years, we're going to have cycles, volatility of inflation, periods, years
spikes
where
of
we,
inflation, yeah.
Yeah, we have large spikes and then we kind of ease back down. But when we ease down, don't get comfortable there. We're not returning to like a, you know, 10 to 20 year period of time where we have two digit inflation. We're going to continually get real inflation in the economy. And by the way, CPI is just, I feel like it's almost the wrong metric to look at anyway.
Yeah, right. The takes I've been hearing about inflation is that we actually don't know to what degree is it a supply side problem or a demand side problem. So one take I heard recently was that, okay, we're increasing interest rates just to, you know, destroy capital, destroy demand. But also, like, there's the whole supply chain thing and all of that. And so there's the other side of the equation that the Fed doesn't have control over. And to what degree that actual inflation is responding to Fed interest rate policy versus just normal consumer and supply chain and supply side things is still unknown. And perhaps the Fed's involvement here is less, and meaning that inflation will just naturally subside just by some of these idiosyncrasies of the COVID era just play out.
We will have to see. That's what the Fed wants to be true. I don't know that that's going to play out. David, let me give you some good news on your ETH Bitcoin ratio trade. All right, ultrasound money still continues to be ultrasound.
Oh, thank God.
You can go look at ultrasound.money at the burn. We just hit 3 million Ether supply burnt. As a percentage of the network, what's that? Just under like 2%?
No, over 2%, I think.
Just under 3%.
Like, yeah, just under 3%. Like
2.7, 2.8, something like that. Mm-hmm. That's incredible. Incredible. Yeah.
3 million, 3 million ETH burned since EIP-1559, not since proof of stake.
Blockspace demand on Ethereum been lately?
Up only. Yeah. So 120 million, and we've burned 3 million because of EIP-1559. That is a significant amount. And EIP-1559 burns Ether at the margins, right? So the people that still have their ICO Ether and are just holding on it, that Ether is not being burnt. It's like the active transactors that have to re-up their supply of Ether, that's being burnt. And so it actually does show up in the price slowly, very slowly.
It's fundamentals.
Yes.
These are what we call fundamentals. Mm-hmm. David, some interesting volume fundamentals as well. Uniswap volume is up big. This is a tweet from Hayden Adams. Uniswap at almost 12 billion in daily volume, hitting 11 digits for the first time ever. That is a crazy amount of volume. I feel like that's silently happening in the background.
Well, as no, not so DeFi. Silently. That is people fleeing out of USDC.
Oh.
And then back into USDC.
Silently happening in the background is what I was picturing.
No, it's quite loud, actually.
No, people are like, oh my God, it's USDC is over. There was a lot of that this weekend, by the way. Yes. We'll get to it later, but of course, USD depegged to 90 cents. Never seen that happen. Actually, below 90 cents.
Below, yeah.
88 cents. Never seen that before. So I guess that's why the exchange activity was busy.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. But it's also not, this is in line with other things. So here's synthetics. $100 million in daily volume for synthetics perpetuals, which is almost a 2x bigger amount than it's ever had on a daily. So like synthetics on layer two on Optimism, coming back with the force. And this has always been a big constraint on synthetics, is layer one gas fees really hamstrung the whole entire synthetics ecosystem. Now that it's on Optimism, it is seeing a rise of the Phoenix for synthetics.
MetaMask swaps
also hitting all-time highs over the weekend. So activity is in. Block-space demand is in.
You know, I'm going to do a quick shout-out for our friends and sponsors at MetaMask here. Seems like an appropriate time. Did you know, Bankless Nation, inside of your MetaMask wallet, there's this really cool feature called the swap. You could do inside of MetaMask. Don't need to go to an exchange. You just swap one asset for another, really reasonable prices, and you get that done inside of your wallet. That's what's
hitting all-time highs. Does the whole order routing thing to go through all the exchanges so you don't have to do it. It's like Kayak hotels.com or
it's just like Kayak.
Trivago or whatever that is. Yeah.
Kayak for digital assets.
Yeah, right.
There you go. And thanks for MetaMask for supporting Bankless as always. David, what do we have coming up next?
Coming up next, what do we have? The Arbitrum airdrop is what we're going to talk about. So we're going to talk about all those details today in about 2 hours and 10 minutes. We're going to live stream with the Arbitrum team. So that is available for those that are listening to this on Friday. But then we're going to talk about the banking crisis and all about the fallout from that. The joint statement from the FDIC, Signature Bank, whether this is an attack on crypto, Tom Emmer's letter to the FDIC, Jeremy Allaire's USDC, and Credit Suisse, because the banking crisis hit Europe. And then after that, we got to talk about the New York Attorney General that alleges that Ether is a security. But do we even care about that person? I don't even know. Anyways, all of that and more as soon as we get back from some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible.
Kraken has been a leader in the crypto industry for the last 12 years. Dedicated to accelerating the global adoption of crypto, Kraken puts an emphasis on security, transparency, and client support, which is why over 9 million clients have come to love Kraken's products. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, the Kraken UX is simple, intuitive, and frictionless, making the Kraken app a great place for all to get involved and learn about crypto. For those with experience, the redesigned Kraken Pro app and web experience is completely customizable to your trading needs, integrating key trading features into one seamless interface. Kraken has a 24/7, 365 client support team that is globally recognized. Kraken support is available wherever, whenever you need them, by phone, chat, or email. And for all of you NFTers out there, the brand new Kraken NFT beta platform gives you the best NFT trading experience possible. Rarity rankings, no gas fees, and the ability to buy an NFT straight with cash. Does your crypto exchange prioritize its customers the way that Kraken does? And if not, sign up with Kraken at kraken.com/bankless.
Learning about crypto is hard. Until now. Introducing MetaMask Learn, an open educational platform about crypto, Web3, self-custody, wallet management, and all the other topics needed to onboard people into this crazy world of crypto. MetaMask Learn is an interactive platform with each lesson offering a simulation for the task at hand, giving you actual, practical experience for navigating Web3. The purpose of MetaMask Learn is to teach people the basics of self-custody and wallet security in a safe environment. And while MetaMask Learn always takes the time to define Web3-specific vocabulary, it is still a jargon-free experience for the crypto-curious user. Friendly, not scary. MetaMask Learn is available in 10 languages with more to be added soon, and it's meant to cater to a global Web3 audience. So, are you tired of having to explain crypto concepts to your friends? Go to learn.metamask.io and add MetaMask Learn to your guides to get onboarded into the world of Web3.
Arbitrum has finally announced the long-awaited airdrop. David, is it layer two season? Are we finally here? Can we say that?
I think so. So Arbitrum's releasing their token. Optimism just had their base announcement with Coinbase. Two, count them, ZK EVMs go live next week. This is the layer two summer that we have been talking about for like 2 years now. Finally coming.
It's happening. It was the summer, just not in summertime. Anyway, the ARB token, that's what they called it, ARB, so not RB. Mm-hmm. I like that, ARB, will be used to govern over the Arbitrum ecosystem. And yes, it will be airdropped early to users. It launches next Friday, as March 23rd. So the announcement is today. We know what's going to happen. We know some of the details. David's getting into that. Mm-hmm. The actual token goes live next Friday.
So, next Thursday, actually. Next Thursday.
Oh, is it next Thursday? Okay, next Thursday. Sorry, guys. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So next Thursday, by the next roll-up, we'll have some actual token information. But yes. David, you know all about this because you've been talking to Arbitrum. We have him on later. Give us the deets.
Yeah, so, okay, 10 billion token supply, 11.something-something% airdropped to users of Arbitrum, 1.something% airdropped to DAOs on Arbitrum to give to their communities, a significant percentage being given to the DAO treasury, something like 45%. So if you count the DAO treasury, or 43%, excuse me. So if you count airdrop to DAOs, users, and the treasury, which the treasury is like up to the community to decide, that's something like 56-ish percent. And then investors and the team get something like 45% of total tokens.
How do you like that? Good distribution? What do you think?
I'm waiting for the community to respond to that. I know Polenia said that this was a bad distribution, but it's very hard to appease Polenia these days. we would know. I went into the Small Brains Discord and I was like, yo, how's your guys' reactions to this?
This,
like,
is how an Arbitrum community, Small Brains.
Small Brains, NFT community, yeah. The Treasure DAO ecosystem. I just went in there and asked for their gut takes, and everyone was very, very excited. And so the sentiment is good. Strong morale, strong sentiment. I think the community is accepting this. That's my take there.
Okay, that's the supply. Now, how are they actually distributing the airdrop portion of it, David? Who's getting this? How do I know if I'm eligible?
Okay, so there's a bunch of different reasons why one could be eligible for the Arbitrum token. I think you're going to go ahead and hit that button, and we can look at this. This happened live, Ryan. Yeah,
this
see how many tokens you got.
All right, how many tokens is a wallet I've been using? Let's see.
Look at that confetti, 3,000 tokens.
I did 5 things out of the 6 things.
Yes, that's, but those cool 5 things also have tiers inside of them as well. So 6 different things, each one's with internal tiers. So did you bridge to Arbitrum? So that's pretty binary, like yes or no. You did. Looks like you did not bridge to Arbitrum Nova, so you did not get that qualification. 2 different chains.
Not with this wallet. Not with this wallet.
Not with this wallet. Yeah, all your 17 other wallets, yeah. transactions over time. So you've conducted transactions doing 2 of distinct months. If you did it with 6 months, you got more. If you did it with 9 months, you got even more than that.
So that's like a usage type thing. How often are you doing this?
Yeah, exactly. Next one, transaction frequency and interaction. More than 4 transactions or interacted with 4 smart contracts as the base tier, and that goes up to 100 transactions with more than 100 smart contracts for the big power users out there. And so there are 4 different tiers inside of this criteria. Below that is transaction value, 10,000, 50,000, or 250,000 in aggregate transaction volume. So if you only had $1,000, but you transferred that $1,000 around 250 times, you would have gotten the top criteria. And then bridged to Arbitrum 1. So assets bridged, if you deposit more than $10,000, $50,000, or $250,000 of assets to Arbitrum 1. And then activity on Arbitrum Nova as well, the other Arbitrum chain.
That's
so those are
good.
All the criteria. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I got 3,000 ARB tokens. Mm-hmm. And again, they're not awarded right now, so I can't come claim these. I can go claim them next Thursday.
Yes, next Thursday, and you will also delegate to a delegate for governance, which brings us to the conversation of governance. So Arbitrum is licensing Arbitrum technology to the Arbitrum DAO. This is actually pretty cool. Not only did they launch their token, they've also launched what they are calling Arbitrum Orbits, which are Arbitrum Layer 3s. So if you choose to build, if you choose to build an Arbitrum roll-up and deploy it on the Ethereum layer 1, so separate from the Arbitrum ecosystem, you must first get approval from the DAO. If you choose to build an Arbitrum rollup and deploy it on Arbitrum 1 or Arbitrum Nova, that is completely permissionless. So you can use Arbitrum technology freely to build on top of Arbitrum pre-existing chains. But if you want to take the Arbitrum technology and build your own independent rollup that settles directly to the Ethereum layer 2, layer 1, you must first get DAO approval by token vote.
Okay, let me make sure I understand this. So if we were to create a bankless Arbitrum rollup and our own, apart from Nova, apart from Arbitrum One, it has to go to DAO vote.
Yes.
The ARB token holders have to give us, you know, 51% or more.
Right.
Okay, so if we want to do that, but it is completely permissionless if we want to build our chain, like what a chain
a layer,
on a chain.
A layer three, yeah.
A layer three.
A layer three on using Arbitrum tech.
Okay, on top of...
On top of Arbitrum.
On top of Arbitrum 1.
That is
or Nova?
Free and permissionless. Or Nova,
free.
Correct.
Free and permissionless.
Yes.
Interesting. Yes. All right. What's the intent behind that, do you think?
Well, naturally, the value of the Arbitrum chain gets contained by the ARB token if you build on top of Arbitrum, one or Nova. But if you build an independent chain, you need to justify why you aren't building inside of the Arbitrum network. And so the DAO will determine whether that effort is legitimate or not.
Fascinating. I think that's very fascinating. Nice experiment. Okay. What else does the ARB token do besides vote? Anything? Do I pay transaction fees for it, or is that still Ether?
Oh, no, that's always going to be Ether. Yeah. The other big thing is that there is a multi-sig that backstops the fault proofs for Arbitrum. So Arbitrum fault proofs are actually operational and running. So the chain is legitimately decentralized. We are now in what Vitalik would call a phase one of roll-up decentralization out of four, which is live fault proofs.
Are we seeing that on L2 beat? The risk?
I don't know if they have that updated that fast.
Okay.
So that is live and running, and it's backstopped by a 9 of 12 multi-sig. So it's like, you know, when your kid is like learning to balance on a bicycle, but you keep your hands there, like that's what's going. So the kid's balancing, but you still keep your hands to catch them there. That's what the multi-sig
does. Did I read this this group of multi-sig holders? It's called the Security Council.
That's correct. It's Security Council.
So if they're attacked, then there is a multi-sig way to kind of like do a fast upgrade, sort of very fast reaction. And,
that's right.
But fraud proofs are happening now.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah,
that's big.
Yeah, and then also the cool thing about Arbitrum governance is that this is not snapshot vote. This is direct on-chain executable governance, and so you don't have to wait for the team to be like, "Oh, this is what the community wanted. Let's do it." No, the Arbitrum governance is executable on-chain directly, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, but like directly on chain, what does that mean? What does that mean?
As opposed to like DAO governance, which is like, all right, let's do a snapshot vote. Like, oh, this side won. That means we're going to do this. No,
where it's like Arbitrum, just social contract.
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
I see.
No, the Arbitrum token governance is live on
chain. It's binding.
It's binding. Correct.
It's on chain binding. That's really cool.
There's also this brand new thing called the Arbitrum Constitution. I mean, you can kind of expect what that is. It's the social contract of the DAO. It also sets some terms, a AIP, Arbitrum Improvement Proposal. There's the DAO Treasury, Govern Chain, Non-Govern Chains, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so this is all found at docs.arbitrum.foundation. And there's now an Arbitrum Foundation that exists.
Very cool. They really gave this a lot of thought. Yes. I can certainly tell this. Big rollout. Okay, let's talk about this. We don't know what the price of the token is at this point in time, but we will by the next rollup.
Yep.
Are there any guesses? Do you have any estimates on what we might be looking at? I guess you could just do comparables of other layer two ecosystems. What would the value of my 3,000 ARB tokens be?
Yeah, so 10 billion Arbitrum tokens. Yeah. Coincidentally, conveniently, Matic and Optimism are roughly valued kind of close to each other. Matic is valued at $11.4 billion, fully diluted. Optimism is valued at $10.7 billion, fully diluted. Optimism has a lot more of dilution to go. The market cap is much lower than the fully diluted value. But the fully diluted value, I think, is the one to pay attention to for the time being. So if we think that Arbitrum is going to be about valued like these two, comparable, like for like, one to one-ish, that would mean that one ARB token is going to be about $1.10-ish if you think that Arbitrum is equivalent to Matic and Optimism.
So just above a dollar is what?
I think that is the safe base case.
Could be
that is a conservative estimation, in my opinion, is like $1.10.
How much supply is hidden? This will be a more similar to Optimism than to Matic in terms of it, the liquid supply that's on the market. Is that right?
Yeah, Matic is like Matic has gone through price discovery, and so
it's an old token. That's why yes. The older the token, the more distribution is in the hands of kind of the open market, and the less is locked up in kind of insiders and investors and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's right. And so the market cap of Matic Polygon is 10.3 billion, where the fully diluted value is 11.3 billion. So it's like 90% issued, right?
Yeah.
Optimism is a fully diluted value of 10.5 billion with a market cap of 750 million.
Under 10%.
So under 10% totally issued. Arbitrum is coming in with a 12% airdrop. So they are going to be a little bit ahead of Optimism in total amount actually live circulating and trading. And so they'll still have a lot more to go in terms of price discovery. Optimism's price discovery is there's a lot of price discovery in the Optimism token, like already baked in. Arbitrum's going to be about a little bit more ahead, but about the same. And so I think there's a lot more DeFi and financial activity on Arbitrum than Optimism. I think it's safe to assume, this is my estimation, I have no idea what the market's going to do, obviously. Like a like-for-like comparable of one-to-one for Arbitrum to Optimism and Polygon is very safe and conservative. I think it would be reasonable to assume a two-to-one valuation.
Two-to-one valuation.
So $2, $2.25 for ARB, depending on how manic the community is and how many tokens they want to purchase on the secondary.
Who knows? And who knows what the initial price might be, right? That's all up to the market to decide. We have a fantastic report that Bankless put out if you want to get the details on that. Because I think if you received AirDrop, the not financial advice question is, what do I do with it? Do I hold it? Right. Do I sell it?
You definitely delegate it.
Definitely doubt. Well, that would require not selling. So,
sure.
But yeah, so you can.
I think you have to delegate the claim, however. So,
you know, Arbitrum's DeFi moat, that is a really interesting thing. I mean, for me personally, I would not sell ARP tokens. I mean, it's layer two seasons just getting started, my friends. And Arbitrum is one of the most promising layer twos out there. Not financial advice. Never is, of course. But we have some videos on the Bankless website you can go check out. We're talking to their team. We're recording that a little bit later. That should be live by the time you get this episode. And the last thing I'll say is if you want an automatic notification system of when your Arbitrum airdrop dropped, you just got to go to earni.fi. So that is earni.fi.
Brian, type in your address.
Earnify is the ultimate airdrop finder for you. Okay. It just it's like a super robot that just alerts you when you have an airdrop in your particular address when you're eligible, because most airdrops people never get an opportunity to claim. So go check that out. There'll be a link in the show notes, of course. Earnify is a Bankless property now. So we're really excited about that tech and the value it's delivering to the Bankless Nation. Wow. Cool day. Okay. Very good.
That was it's nice to have fun things to talk about, fun and happy things. But now we're going to have to go on to the sad things.
This is a joint statement by the Treasury, the Federal Reserve, and the FDIC. Those are all the big ones. Big Gov telling us something on March 12th. Was that Sunday? Did they issue that on a Sunday?
Sunday evening at 6:15 Eastern. Basically, the last moment that they had to issue the statement before people were going to get real crazy Monday morning when markets opened up.
All right. So what happened? For people who didn't catch our episode that we did on Monday about the banking crisis, can you just give us the highlights of what actually happened from the last roll-up until now?
So right after we recorded their last roll-up, Silicon Valley Bank had a run on the bank, and people realized that this bank was going to legitimately run out of money to give to people that had cash in Silicon Valley Bank, and so that caused just a bunch of just fear, because many of startups in the crypto space and just overall startups in general bank with Silicon Valley Bank. Some of the startups that you and I, Ryan, have invested in have used Silicon Valley Bank as their bank no longer, because that bank is gone. But People were very, very worried that this would create contagion. And so this run on the bank would create runs on other banks, because the reason why Silicon Valley Bank went under was because of a common theme, a common structure that many, many banks have, which is long-dated securities, long-dated maturity securities, treasuries that are like 10-year treasuries, 5-year treasuries, long-term treasuries versus short-term treasuries. And so when they bought these long-term treasuries and then the Federal Reserve jacked up interest rates, those long-term treasuries and other securities that were all like long-term time horizons went down in value quite a lot. And so that created a big hole. And then people needed to withdraw their cash at some point in time.
And they did it fast.
And they did it fast. Well, because people started to realize that there's not a lot of money left, so they had to, you know, try and cram
through
the door.
And because we can. It was social media that when the VCs are typing in all caps, like, there's a run on the bank, you know, withdraw your funds. That
cascades.
Guess
what happens?
Yeah,
a run on the bank.
Yeah, people don't literally show up, although there were some people actually showing up at the branches of Silicon Valley Bank. But, like, people are just withdrawing electronically. Wire transfers, doing it as fast as possible. That's what the run on the bank was. So we had Silvergate, then Silicon Valley Bank. There was another one as well. Yes. But
so this was the surprise in this statement here from the joint statement, was that Signature Bank was also announced in this statement that they have also shuttered Signature Bank in addition to Silicon Valley Bank. So that was a surprise. The Fed, the FDIC. And so not only did they take control, seize Silicon Valley Bank, and then here's the big thing about the statement, is that FDIC insurance, which is usually $250,000, they effectively just raised it to infinity for these two banks. So they the Fed took over Silicon Valley and Signature Bank and said, hey, if you have money in this bank, no, even if it's over $250,000, you will totally be insured and we will give you your money back starting on Monday. And that's what quelled the fears and that's what stopped the bank run. But it was really this Signature Bank shutdown, which was a kind of a surprise, because it wasn't Signature that had a run on the bank. It was Silicon Valley Bank. And so the feds said that, well, Signature Bank was also under stress. And so they seized that one as well.
Wow, all these banks that start with an S, I think, are cursed. So just quick recap. So last week, early last week, Silvergate Bank, dead. That was a crypto-focused bank. Next, Silicon Valley Bank, run on the bank. That happened Friday, was shut down. The Fed came in. And then all weekend, everyone, the entire market was left to panic, right?
Right.
USDC, trades office peg, VC shouting, like, what's going to happen? What about the depositors? Everyone's panicking because they still have funds in Silicon Valley Bank. And we don't know if depositors are going to have that deposit guaranteed. And then the Fed comes out late in the evening on Sunday, before markets start, at least traditional markets start. Crypto is trading during this whole time, never shuts down.
Right.
And they say, nope, depositors, we're going to make them whole for Silicon Valley Bank. Oh, and by the way, we're shutting down preemptively Signature Bank. That's what this is. So the question is, like, Signature Bank, why Signature Bank? Was this a targeted attack, or was Signature Bank just as weak as Silicon Valley Bank?
So when I read this statement, my initial reaction was, well, the reason why they would take over Silicon Valley Bank and promise infinite insurance to all depositors is because they are the worry of a contagion event of many, many runs on many banks is legitimate, and that's why they would do this. So therefore, it does make sense that there is another bank that is also under duress that is not sufficiently liquid to give depositors their money back. So that, to me, makes sense.
It could be Signature. It could be anything, right?
Right. Other takes have come out with other information that this was an opportunistic takedown of a crypto bank, which, if you take the other side of this perspective, well, we were starting January and February talking about Operation Chokepoint 2.0 and how the Fed and the Treasury was trying to come after politically service banking services that would bank crypto customers. And so, well, it kind of makes sense that they would do this regardless of the actual financial condition. And so people have passed this back and forth. And so this is part of this story here. Here's Nick Carter's take, which is talking about former Senator Barney Frank of Dodd-Frank, the Dodd-Frank Act, openly admits that Signature was arbitrarily shuttered despite no insolvency because regulators wanted to kill off the last major pro-crypto bank. He is not a crypto person. He does not care about our industry. So this is like a decently unbiased take, is that he said that there's no real objective reason that Signature Bank had to be seized, which is a big statement from this, the Frank of Dodd-Frank, to say.
This is Barney Frank, like pointing the finger at the Fed and the U.S. government and saying, this is a direct quote. I think part of what happened was that regulators wanted to send a very strong anti-crypto message. Barney Frank saying this. This is not crypto zealots saying this. We became the poster boy because there was no insolvency based on the fundamentals.
And the reason why he's saying we is because he is at Silvergate. He is a board member at Signature. Signature.
We'll get our S's. There's so many S's here with these banks.
Yes. And so officials, Fed officials saying crypto had nothing to do with a Signature takedown. But then in this article, it's stated that any buyer of Signature Bank who wants to buy this distressed bank must agree to give up all the crypto businesses at that bank. Okay.
Oh my God. I didn't know that.
Not looking great.
So the traditional way to kind of, I'm going to say bailout, but save depositors as a bank is to have a bigger bank buy all the depositors' assets. Right. And this is saying that maybe any buyer of Signature has to agree to give up all the crypto business at
let
the bank.
Crypto businesses fail. Sick.
How is this legal?
Yeah, I don't know. So here is Zero Hedge commenting on that recent Nick Carter take. Crypto is now a political issue. The Democrats want to crush it, and the Republicans, GOP, will use that in 2024. We'll see what that happens when the elections come around.
I hope this doesn't become a left versus right thing.
Is Congressman Tom Emmer, Republican, saying, today I sent a letter to FDIC Chairman Grumberg regarding reports that the FDIC is weaponizing recent instability in the banking sector to purge legal activity from the United States. So Tom Emmer, member of Congress. Also, we are in talks with him about coming on Bankless, so we will talk to him directly soon.
I think he's coming on next Friday, David.
But that is not all. So here's Jake Stravinsky tweeting out, today the Blockchain Association sent FOIA requests, that is Freedom of Information Act requests, to the Fed, the FDIC, and OCC demanding information about the unlawful banking of crypto companies. We are collecting evidence of debanking. Share your story with us. And he gives an email to do that, debanked@theblockchainassociation.org, plus a thread. So whether or not that this was a run on Signature Bank or this was a targeted political takedown of one of the few remaining crypto banks, sounds like we're going to get down to the bottom of it, because we have the Blockchain Association with freedom of information because we live in a democracy, and also a congressman going after this as well. So
the sleuths are on the case.
We will find this out.
We'll see if the allegations are true. Yeah, Jake Stravinsky here tweeting, there are troubling reports of crypto companies having their bank accounts closed with no notice and explanation. And this is a disturbing trend suggesting that regulators are trying to cut crypto entirely out of the banking system. Not legal to target an industry like that and to target a specific set of depositors. David, let's go back to the USDC story, though, because that hit crypto. Of course, crypto didn't stop trading. USDC was still trading against other stablecoin assets, dropped down to 88 cents.
Panic.
We had Jeremy Allaire on the podcast earlier, but this is his statement that he issued right after that Fed letter was sent out that all depositors at Silicon Valley and Signature Bank would be made whole. What's the story for USDC here?
Yeah, so I've pulled out three tweets out of his thread that I thought were worth stating. 100% of USDC reserves are safe and sound, and we will complete our transfer of remaining SVB, Silicon Valley Bank cash, to BNY Mellon. Much bigger bank. With the closure of Signature Bank announced tonight, we will not be able to process minting and redemptions through Signet, which is a product from Signature Bank. Signature Network is what it was. It was a product to facilitate customer transfers instantaneously inside of Signature Bank. So like Wintermute, I believe, is a customer of Signet, no longer because it's down. And so like you could have instant bank transfers across clients. Since
isn't Signet still up? It's just being operated now by BNY Mellon.
Apparently, it's still up and running, but they are no longer depending on that. So they are now taking on settlements through BNY Mellon. And then lastly, indeed, the Payment Stablecoin Act, which remains a very active pursuit in Congress, would enshrine a law, a regime where stablecoin funds, aka USDC, would be held with cash at the Fed and short-term T-bills. We need this law now more than ever if we truly want a safe financial system. I think it's worth noting that, like, two banks that served Circle went down, and Circle persists and is trading
just
at a dollar.
Just one step ahead. Yep. All you got to do.
And now it's at BNY Mellon, man. And so, like, they are just climbing the ladder of bigger and bigger and safer banks. Like, USDC is an increasingly safe place to hold your money.
Well, now, basically, one USDC is as good as a bank in a too-big-to-fail financial banking system. So, basically, you know USDC is going to get depositor bailed out if anything goes wrong, as long as the U.S. banking structure holds.
As long as don't become overly draconian about crypto,
Right, exactly. Anyway, the full story with Jeremy Allaire is actually on the Bankless podcast. Yes. I learned so much about USDC.
That was one of the hardest, the most hard-hitting 30-minutes podcast. It was a very short podcast, and he was just, like, dropping the
information. Yeah, he was like, here's what happened over the last 5 years.
We asked, let me tell you two questions in 30 minutes, and he answered more questions than I had.
Yeah, go check that out. Of course, this is a centralized stablecoin. This is not a decentralized stablecoin, but that is still important in the
it's
crypto ecosystem as well.
For like, Jeremy is a crypto person. He is our Trojan horse into TradFi.
Yeah, that's how we do it. They're still paying ETH gas fees. They're still burning ETH, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so this contagion has maybe spread to Europe. What's the story here as we record this, David?
Yeah, so Credit Suisse under duress in Europe. Credit Suisse, perhaps not the most, like, legitimate bank out there. Perhaps did some money laundering.
Are you causing a run on the bank right now, David?
Perhaps could have facilitated more legitimate financial transactions. I don't know. could have been better. Anyways, the shares of Credit Suisse hit all-time lows, but then the stock price resurged because the Swiss Central Bank agreed to loan the bank up to 50 billion francs, $54 billion, to bolster confidence in the country's second largest lender following the collapse of two other banks, is the article. So Credit Suisse not looking great, but they also needed a bailout from a central bank.
The weak banks are shaky, right? But I do think, I mean, central banks, whatever country you're in, are going to bail out depositors. They can't afford to have banking contagion spread across all of their respective countries. So I think that's the story here. There's a story about stock prices of the big banks as well. What are we looking at here?
A bunch of lines going down and to the right of JP Morgan, Bank of America, Citigroup, Wells Fargo, Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs. Not one of them is better than negative 10%. So,
Bank stock slide. Ryan Selkis had a take here. Well, bank stock slide, what was crypto doing last week?
Up 10%.
Down 10 to 20% versus up 10% for crypto. Well, I mean, like, doesn't this expose, is this a narrative trade? I think it's a few things. I think one, it's a little bit of a narrative trade. People waking up and being like, well, how safe is my money? Number two, I think this indicates a more dovish Fed moving forward. How much can Powell actually increase rates? Which is, of course, good for risk on assets like crypto. Here we go. FedNow. What is FedNow, and how does that link to the story of what we've been talking about, David?
FedNow is like as close as you get to a CBDC without actually making a CBDC.
It's not a CBDC in itself, is it? It's like a sidechain for digital bank dollars.
It's like a transaction sidechain for the Fed. Instant payment service from FedNow starting in July aims to reduce the gap in payment time between United States financial institutions. This instant payment network will settle payments in seconds and support transactions between consumers, merchants, and banks. Does not rely on blockchain. So the conspiracy here, Ryan, is that Signature Bank was taken by the Fed. Conveniently, FedNow service is announced.
Just rolling it out.
FedNow
is government tech.
Right. It's government Signet.
It's a government sidechain. It's like Signet made their own private sidechain to facilitate these banking transactions and to settle kind of I guess crypto payments in the US banking system. This is Damon Nam expressing that Silvergate Exchange Network, Signature had Signet. Both were private networks for companies to transfer value between each other using digital assets. Where are both now? These companies enabled alternative currencies that threaten a CBDC and Fed now. That's the conspiracy theory that maybe the feds were trying to take this new network down before it blossomed into something bigger.
I will leave this up to the imagination of the listener.
David, is ETH a security? All right, this was buzzing last week as well because New York Attorney General alleged that ETH is a security.
So someone who does not get to determine what a security is alleged that ETH is a security. That should be what the headline is.
Okay, so what's the take here? What's going on?
The New York Attorney General is suing KuCoin, an exchange, saying that it violated securities laws by offering tokens that meet the definition of a security without registering with the Attorney General's office. What were those tokens? Luna. Well, no one's going to defend that one. UST and Ether. Like, just lumping all those things together as if they're the same. And they have argued that Ether is a security. Why is Ether a security? Well, because the value of Ether is dependent on efforts of others, including co-founder Vitalik Buterin and the Ethereum Foundation, which, man, are we talking to a Bitcoin maxi or are we talking to the New York Attorney General? I can't tell the difference.
It's important to realize these are just court filings to try to prove a case. So it's not even necessarily
a
statement. I feel like it made headlines because of the name. It's a, you know,
right.
New York Attorney General of the name, not that this is actually, she doesn't have the power to do this, basically. It'd just be like me tweeting, Bitcoin is a security. I don't have the power to, I declare a security.
I declare.
Doesn't work like that, guys. This is pretty bad. Yeah. The statement, you can read the details. And there's some analysis this week of what happens if Ether is a security.
It's just an illegitimate question. Like, what happens if Ether is a security? Nothing's gonna happen.
Well, I guess if somehow the US government all colludes as part of this extended operation choke point to choke off crypto and somehow Ether is able to declare Ether a security and that is not defeated in the court system, then what happens? The US is eliminated from the crypto race. Like, it's not going to kill Ethereum long term. And by the way, I think that, like, I give the odds of that happening, 1%, 2% maybe. Like, it's probably not worth thinking about. That's my current take. I mean, I could be wrong about that.
It's not worth thinking about,
But it's just a lot of noise. And speaking of noise, Gary Gensler is saying some of the same noise as well. What's Gary saying?
He's saying that proof of stake tokens are securities. Returns that token holders see from stakings indicate that these tokens are securities, according to Gensler, and would need to be registered under U.S. securities laws. Whether they're promoting or putting into a protocol and locking up their tokens in a protocol, that often a small group of entrepreneurs and developers are developing, I would suggest that each of these token operators seek to come into compliance, and the same with the intermediaries. Like, at this point, this is just the Gary stump speech. Like, oh, crypto is security.
Crypto? I declare security. A security.
I declare. Also, Gary can't also... Does Gary get to determine what is a security?
No, he doesn't.
No,
either.
Not even Gary gets to determine that. Yeah. What is that determined by? Courts, right? Yeah. Am I right on that one?
It should be. I think Gary can prosecute, but then he has to prove his case in court. Who are you going to prosecute with Ethereum? How does that even work?
You're going to take Vitalik Buterin to court? Okay.
Man, I wouldn't like to see that. But
I would not like to see that. I would love to see Vitalik. Okay, so when Vitalik brings out, I've seen Vitalik bring out claws sometimes, like against Bitcoin maxis, or when he does
claws in a way that's like, I'm going to rationally destroy your argument in front of you, sort of thing. Not
in a very concise way, I'm going to verbally pants you. Maybe that's the right way to do it. Verbally, I've seen Vitalik verbally pants people a number of times. It is just an absolute dream daydream to imagine that he might be able to do that for Gary Gensler one time.
I think this could happen in Congress one day. But anyway, I don't want to put Vitalik in that situation. Yeah. This is all stupid noise anyway. It's not worth anyone's time. David, we got a lot coming up next. What are we covering?
Starbucks sold 2,000 NFTs inside of 20 minutes. We have a withdrawal date. Did you know that, Ryan? In the middle of the Arbitrum airdrop, like everyone's talking about Arbitrum today, we also got the date for
Shanghai Fork. I just learned that by reading the roll-up agenda today.
So we're going to talk about when withdrawals are going to be enabled. We're going to have to talk about Euler and the hack there. And Aztec is sunsetting Aztec Connect, but perhaps for something better. So we're going to get to all these updates and more as soon as we talk to some of these fantastic sponsors that make the show possible.
Uniswap is the largest on-chain marketplace for self-custody digital assets. Uniswap is, of course, a decentralized exchange, but you know this because you've been listening to Bankless. But did you know that the Uniswap web app has a shiny new fiat on-ramp? Now you can go directly from fiat in your bank to tokens in DeFi inside of Uniswap. Not only that, but Polygon, Arbitrum, and Optimism layer 2s are supported right out of the gate. But that's just DeFi. Uniswap is also an NFT aggregator, letting you find more listings for the best prices across the NFT world. With Uniswap, you can sweep floors on multiple NFTs, and Uniswap's universal router will optimize your gas fees for you. Uniswap is making it as easy as possible to go from bank account to bankless assets across Ethereum, and we couldn't be more thankful for having them as a sponsor. So go to app.uniswap.org today to buy, sell, or swap tokens and NFTs. The Phantom Wallet is coming to Ethereum. The number one wallet on Solana is bringing its millions of users and beloved UX to Ethereum and Polygon. If you haven't used Phantom before, you've been missing out. Phantom was one of the first wallets to pioneer Solana staking inside the wallet and will be offering similar staking features for Ethereum and Polygon. But that's just staking. Phantom is also the best home for your NFTs. Phantom has a complete set of features to optimize your NFT experience. Pin your favorites, hide your uglies, burn the spam, and also manage your NFT sale listings from inside the wallet. Phantom is, of course, a multi-chain wallet, but it makes chain management easy, displaying your transactions in a human-readable format with automatic warnings for malicious transactions or phishing websites. Phantom has already saved over 20,000 users from getting scammed or hacked. So get on the Phantom waitlist and be one of the first to access the multi-chain beta. There's a link in the show notes, or you can go to phantom.app/waitlist to get access.
Here we go. When is the next Ethereum hard fork, David? When can I withdraw staked ETH?
Specifically at block number 6,209,536. That is your answer. Maybe you're asking, when is that?
Chat David GPT. Very precise.
Yeah, that is going to be April 12th. So a little bit over, under 1 month away from today. Today is the 16th of March. April 12th is when withdrawals happen.
We have a date.
Lido, however, also has to upgrade its own smart contracts to enable withdrawals, right? And so Lido is targeting mid-May to allow for Ether to come out of the Lido DAO. So that's the news there.
So there could be a delay. That's happening in May, even though the rest of the Ethereum protocol is upgrading earlier.
Right, correct.
Gotcha. Let's talk about some sad news. This is, I think, really devastating for a really cool DeFi builder team, Euler Labs. What happened, David? What's the news?
Yeah, Euler, it's a money market, kind of like Compound and Aave, with some cool new mechanisms, much more governance minimized with new liquidation schemes that all of the big brains out there think are pretty cool. It was definitely growing in popularity. It was dominating in the staked ETH, in the staked ETH world. Really great team. Ryan and I are investors in Euler, so disclaimer, I guess, for that. $196 million drained in DAI, USDC, staked ETH, and WBTC. This is so far the largest hack of 2023. And so they did their best to plug the hole, but not before $196 million was exploited.
How did it happen?
I mean, I'm beyond my capacity to understand the exploit here.
It was a flash loan.
Yeah, it was a flash loan to start. And then, some sort of exploit in the code. It has since been plugged. So that vulnerability is now gone. But
here's what's crazy. So they had six audits of their smart contract. And this functionality was existing 8 months. Mm-hmm. So it had a Lindy of about 8 months live with tens of millions of dollars. And this whole amount has been drained. So a lot of DeFi users affected by this. Yep. This is, I should emphasize, like some of the hacks that we've seen over the years are kind of like protocols that are just fast and loose. Right. They don't take multi-sigs, security into account. they're making obvious, you know, trade-offs, and they're obviously flawed. Oilers, not one of those.
Right.
These are one of the teams that are doing it the right way.
Right.
And it happened to them.
Yeah.
This is,
dude, when you see six audits and it still gets hacked, that's just, man, like smart contracts. Like the only good metaphor I've heard for smart contracts is like they're this, like the steam engine, like they just blow up a bunch and then one day they start working. This one sadly blew up.
Devastating. And yeah. I guess we have to emphasize, right? There's just DeFi is taking this on the chin.
Yep.
Of course, this was a mistake. Obviously, there was a flaw in the way that this was constructed. Mm-hmm. And what we always end every episode with is crypto is risky. So is DeFi. You could lose everything.
What you put in.
That's what we say. Yeah. And this is another reminder of that. Be careful in these new crypto ecosystems, the new frontier. People get hurt sometimes.
So Euler is offering a $1 million bounty that it goes to anything that leads to the arrest of this hacker. As of this morning, Ryan, we are watching the funds go through Tornado Cash, which more or less indicates that the hacker has no intention of returning the funds whatsoever. The likelihood that this is North Korea is like, I mean, I think it could be a state actor.
It's you think North the FBI is on the Korea. Case?
Yeah. I mean, they've talked to Chainalysis, they've talked to law enforcement, they've talked to Coinbase's like Chainalysis equivalent. I mean, the fact that it's immediately going through Tornado Cash, my money is on this is North Korea.
Wow. Upsetting. Definitely. Yeah. David, what about Aztec? So they are sunsetting Aztec Connect. I don't think this is bad news necessarily, but I was confused when I saw this.
Yeah, people are like, oh, Aztec, they're getting shut down by law enforcement or regulators.
Because they're a privacy protocol, layer two privacy protocol.
Yes, so like Tornado Cash, but if it was in a whole entire chain. So they are Sunset, Aztec Connect, and ZK Pay, Aztec Pay, which is like basically Tornado Cash, but better. But they are doing this to build a next generation encrypted ZK rollup. And so they are basically sunsetting this thing that was a really good stepping stone for what is about to come, which is probably like the most sophisticated privacy technology on Ethereum. This is just the prelude to that, if you will.
NFT stuff. Starbucks sold 2,000 NFTs in 20 minutes. This is pretty big. What happened here?
2,000 NFTs priced at $100 each, sold out in 20 minutes. 2,000 digital stamps, journey stamps. I can't say that I know what these do.
Yeah. Do they get you coffee? They don't get you coffee.
I don't know what they get.
Let me look at these journey stamps. Secondary marketplace. Look at this. Floor price of $650. Oh, they're very, very pretty.
Those are pretty.
It's like the Starbucks mermaid.
Yeah,
you know, that's a Starbucks different mermaid. Manifestations.
Yeah. Yeah. What do they get you? What do they get you?
Starbucks clout. I don't know.
Odyssey Starbucks Odyssey member, you can join a waitlist. So something about a Starbucks Odyssey.
All right.
I mean, Starbucks doesn't have great coffee, but they got great
David
NFTs.
David is too much of a coffee snog to buy the Starbucks
NFT.
That's
what
this means.
Yeah.
Epic, the creators of Fortnite have also close to 20 crypto games in their store pipeline. That's pretty big, David.
Yeah. Okay. So over the last like 6-9 months, I've been like, oh, everyone's talking about crypto gaming is the next big thing. And I was like, okay, that's a fun narrative. Like, let's see if it plays out. After going to ETH Denver, after hearing news like this and talking to some other people about what's going on, like not this in my mind has gone from narrative to no, this is real.
Your game.
Like, there was a game at ETH Denver that was absolutely beautiful. For those who like Dark Souls, it looked a lot like Dark Souls. That all the assets in the game were NFTs on a blockchain. And I'm like, well, that did not.
All I gotta say is like, well balanced economic games are fun.
Yeah,
they're just fun. Like even when I'm playing like crypto, it feels like a game sometimes. Sure. It's just one giant economic game, and it's a lot of fun. It's cool that Epic is doing stuff here. On the opposite end of the spectrum, though, Meta is ending NFT support on Instagram. Meta!
Dude, what?
Instagram. It seemed like only yesterday you just deployed this. This
right.
is product news from a product lead at Meta. Some product news across the company. We're looking closely at what we prioritize, including our focus. We're winding down digital collectibles to focus on other ways to support creators, people, and businesses. I'm disappointed by this, David.
Yeah. Were people just not using it very much?
I don't know. Maybe people weren't using it. Maybe
it's kind of a bummer.
I mean, they got in at the top and they're leaving at the bottom.
Yeah.
The simple take is just tourists are tourists and settlers are settlers. Guess. And it seems like Meta is maybe acting like a tourist in crypto right now.
Man. Well, they say at the bottom of this, they say, and look forward to supporting the many NFT creators who use GoldPasset. But like they said, looking forward to support, who using Instagram and Facebook to amplify their work. Well, but you just took away the feature.
They support you though.
They like morally?
I don't know. My take is this is a big opportunity for Web3 Social. If Web2 Social is going to say bye-bye to NFTs, that's fine. It's a bigger opportunity for decentralized networks. This is, by the way, like the same week that Meta and Zuckerberg announced that they're going to build some sort of decentralized social media thing.
Right. Some Twitter alternative.
All confusing to me. We'll see what plays out.
Scroll to that fourth tweet because this doesn't make any sense. Let me be clear. Creating opportunities for creators and businesses to connect with their fans and monetize remains a priority, and we're going to focus on areas that we can make impact at scale, such as messaging and monetization opportunities for Reels. Maybe I am an NFT daydreamer optimist.
Yes, you
but
are.
This seems to be the opposite of that. Hey, we're going to not do anything in Web3 and we're going to go back to Web2 and focus on that to help support our creators.
Pretty regressive. Tourists leave, settlers stay. That's all I got to say. It's a good time to shout out the Bankless collectors. We're doing experiments in NFTs and collectibles.
It's working
NFTs.
For us, Meta. We're doing it just fine.
Look at the top collectors here. Should we shout them out for a second? Let's
absolutely.
Shout them out. What do we got here?
How many podcasts have we actually tokenized yet? I think like 6 or 10 or 11
every
or
Monday,
something.
And then we did every 5 Monday. Last year, our Genesis collection. Mm-hmm. Who are the top collectors though? You want to read them out?
Lyward. .eth. We've just figured out how to pronounce his name, Lyward.
Thank you, Lyward.
36 tokens. 36. Coming in at number one, 36. Coming in at number two at 32 tokens is Landrin.eth. So thank you for being one and two. The race is on. We also got Coker.eth at 20 tokens. Vault.DiderCrux.eth and Automagic.eth 2019 and 18 tokens. So they're the top 5 collectors. We really appreciate the support, guys.
Thank you, Bankless Nation collectors. Fidelity Crypto quietly went live, giving millions of retail customers access to Bitcoin and Ether.
This one was quiet.
This was a quiet thing.
Uniswap was not quiet. This one was quiet.
This was quiet. Okay, so Fidelity is absolutely massive. 37 million retail accounts. What do? They just added a buy button for Bitcoin and Ether inside of their app.
Bullish.
Where are they custodying this, David? Do you know this?
I do not know.
I think Fidelity has their own custody thing too, don't they? Beautiful. What if they're using that or something like Coinbase? I don't know.
I do not know. This isn't bullish yet because no offense to Fidelity customers, but I will call them the herd. They're not early.
Hey, I'm a Fidelity customer.
Also have a Kraken account, I'm assuming.
Yes.
And so where do you do your buys, Ryan? In Fidelity or Kraken? And
always
so
Kraken.
The people that are buying today, like the idea is that when the herd does come, they don't have to leave and they don't have to, they can stay inside of their close, comfy, cozy zone of protection,
zone
which
of
is
comfort.
Fidelity, with the buy button for Ether, you know?
When MetaMask integration, Fidelity, when do you do that? When can I sign in with Ethereum? All right. God, what do we got? Releases. Uniswap on the BNB chain. That happened.
And that's the story.
All right. We also have a raise this week. Mm-hmm. Wanted to mention Soul Wallet, backed with $3 million, aims to bring self-hosted crypto wallets to the next billion. Big fan of smart contract wallets. I think we are going to see a wallet renaissance. Do we want to call a wallet summer? Because that if we do... It's going to be 2 years later that it actually happens.
But it does happen.
It will happen.
It will happen.
There will be a wallet summer. Maybe Sol will be included in that. But we're starting to see a lot of smart contract wallet and wallet funding in general. It's really exciting to see great teams doing this. And this is from a previous Bankless guest, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So whoever listened to the Layer Zero with JJ, Zhi Zhang Zhang, who dissented out of China because he worked for Baidu, which is TikTok's parent company. And he refused.
Isn't it Tencent, not Baidu? Am I wrong about that?
I thought it was Baidu.
Okay. I don't know.
I mean, did you listen to the episode, Ryan?
I did. I don't remember though. But
I think it was Baidu.
Commenter, correct us.
Yeah, he refused to build out an algorithm that could identify Uyghurs. for Baidu, basically, because the Chinese government wanted to suppress them. And he was like, I don't agree with that. Now
Badass.
He lives in San Francisco.
Badass.
And is building a smart contract wallet. And Ryan and I are investors in Sol Wallet as well, because we believe in it.
Fantastic. Jobs this week, guys. Check them out on the Bankless Jobs Board. I'll read a few. A marketing manager at Rise, a sales development representative for Web3 and crypto at Rise as well. Uniswap, hiring like crazy. Senior product designer. They need an application security engineer and a senior mobile engineer that is React Native. All the jobs are always available for you at bankless.palette.com. Go check them out. David, we got questions coming up. We got takes coming up. What else?
And what else after that? Of course, what you and I are bullish on. It might perhaps have to do with layer twos. I don't know. And of course, the meme of the week. So all of this and more as soon as we get back from some of these fantastic sponsors that make the show possible.
Arbitrum One is pioneering the world of secure Ethereum scalability and is continuing to accelerate the Web3 landscape. Hundreds of projects have already deployed on Arbitrum One, producing flourishing DeFi and NFT ecosystems. With the recent addition of Arbitrum Nova, gaming and social dApps like Reddit are also now calling Arbitrum home. Both Arbitrum One and Nova leverage the security and decentralization of Ethereum and provide a builder experience that's intuitive, familiar, and fully EVM compatible. On Arbitrum, both builders and users will experience faster transaction speeds with significantly lower gas fees. With Arbitrum's recent migration to Arbitrum Nitro, it's also now 10 times faster than before. Visit arbitrum.io, where you can join the community, dive into the developer docs, bridge your assets, and start building your first dApp. With Arbitrum, experience Web3 development the way it was meant to be. Secure, fast, cheap, and friction-free. Hey, Bankless Nation. If you're listening to this, it's because you're on the free Bankless RSS feed. Did you know that there's an ad-free version of Bankless that comes with the Bankless Premium subscription? No ads, just straight to the content. But that's just one of many things that a premium subscription gets you. There's also the Token Report, a monthly bullish, bearish, neutral report on the hottest tokens of the month. And the regular updates from the Token Report go into the Token Bible, your first-stop shop for every token worth investigating in crypto. Bankless Premium also gets you a 30% discount to the Permissionless Conference, which means it basically just pays for itself. There's also the airdrop guide to make sure you don't miss a drop in 2023. But really, the best part about Bankless Premium is hanging out with me, Ryan, and the rest of the Bankless team in the Inner Circle Discord, only for premium members. Want the alpha? Check out Ben the Analyst's DGen Pit, where you can ask him questions about the token report. Got a question? I've got my own Q&A room for any questions that you might have. At Bankless, we have huge things planned for 2023, including a new website with login with your Ethereum address capabilities, and we're super excited to ship what we are calling Bankless 2.0 soon TM. So if you want extra help exploring the frontier, subscribe to Bankless Premium. It's under 50 cents a day and provides a wealth of knowledge and support on your journey west. I'll see you in the Discord.
Back with the questions of the week from the Bankless Nation. You can ask those in the Bankless Discord if you are a citizen. As USDC starts looking more and more like a state-backed currency, totally agree there, do you trust it more or less? I feel like I trust the Fed to prop it up like any other bank, but does that go with the vision of decentralization? Xerox Caesar Severus asked this question.
So I think this starts off a very big conversation. And one part is, do we trust USDC? The second part is, how much do we want our DeFi ecosystem to depend on the USDC? Mm. So USDC looking more and more like a state-backed currency, 100%. Do I trust it more or less? I trust it to be $1 and to always be able for me to have a claim on $1 of value more and more and more. It is becoming closer to being the CBDC that will never actually come about from the central bank. It is doing like this backdoor strategy.
It's
like
a proto CDBC.
It's a proto totally CBDC, is. And yep. That's very bullish for it being strong guarantees about always having $1 no matter what happens, even if like cryptography gets broken, for example.
It's close to the base layer of right. The money printer, basically. It's always going to be redeemable, it seems right. Like.
And it is doing its job of being $1 no matter what the back end looks like. So I trust that more and more and more every single day. And I think the market is going to understand that too. Like people who sold USDC at 88 cents, they're going to remember that if USDC ever like loses its peg again, like mm-hmm. It's USDC is starting to become anti-fragile.
It's coming so, up stronger out of this.
Right. Mess. So I trust it more and more and more. Does that go with the vision of decentralization? Well, we watched DAI depeg because it was dependent on USDC. A lot of DeFi apps don't actually ingest oracles for USDC price. They make an implicit assumption that one USDC is $1, which is making DeFi and all the apps that do that enshrine USDC as $1 in the same way that USDC is trying to become enshrined in the Fed as the proto CBDC.
Makes DeFi a bit more fragile.
It makes DeFi more dependent on the Federal Reserve and more dependent on the USDC. Is that good? Well, it depends on how radical you are, I think. And so I'm of the opinion that our current financial system and our new financial system will integrate and hopefully be friendly with each other. Other people are more radical than myself. And then you say, like, not $1, like, stop, like, rye, not die, even to this point. Like, some people don't like how USDC is inside of MakerDAO. Everyone finds themselves on a particular place in the spectrum. I think it is definitely something to be wary about. But I do think that accepting USDC and allowing for it to grow does offer very big adoption tailwinds from people who we would otherwise not be able to convince about crypto. What's your take on this, Ryan?
My take on it is USDC is generally good for crypto because the more USDC that is settled on crypto networks like Ethereum, the more gas fees they pay, and the more our decentralized native currency like Ethereum, Ether, the asset, can thrive and grow. Every time somebody transacts with USDC on Ethereum, they pay tax to ETH holders,
right,
which increases the value of Ether.
Right.
So like backdoor, we win. We don't get that sort of treatment in the US banking system. So it's totally a net win for crypto. Now, does that mean we should become dependent on it? Absolutely not. But you got to look at the long game here. The long game is we are only going to have two types of digital currencies. Type one is central bank digital currencies, of which USDC is a proto version of that. It's like that. Type two is crypto, internet native, real, non-central bank backed assets. The best assets that fit that profile right now are Ether and Bitcoin. Yep. Those are the only two assets kind of in the running for that sort of treatment. And then you can create more stable derivatives on top of them. And so that's the bifurcation. As long as we preserve both, and as long as our decentralized native currencies get stronger and stronger over time, we are winning relative to the position we are in. So I would much rather see the Fed adopt something like USDC that pays transaction fees to Ethereum than to go the Chinese central bank route of creating their own blockchain network and their own super central bank digital currency and not deploying on a decentralized network entirely. That's so it's good. It's not perfect, but it's better than them not doing it. So it's a net win for crypto.
Right. I think USDC is more of a Trojan horse for crypto into TradFi than it is for like the Fed into 100%. Crypto. I think Jeremy Allaire is a crypto person more than he is a banker. Although he is a banker, he is more of a crypto person.
He's a crypto banker.
He's on our side. He's on our side.
Well, look, if you have USDC, how much? So by the way, USDC is basically, I count USDC as it's just as secure as a dollar in my Wells Fargo account. It's kind of one and the same, except this dollar,
it almost was more secure than dollars inside of Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank.
So this dollar is now it's tokenized. And guess what? I have easy access to trade this dollar anytime on a decentralized exchange called Uniswap.
Right.
In fact, that's why we saw Uniswap volume out there. So it's another on-ramp to crypto. I can't do that with my Wells Fargo dollar. I can't go on Uniswap and do my savings account dollar, trade that with ETH. I can with USDC. We could go on about this, but I think you guys get the point. This is why we are still excited about stablecoin adoption, even if it's not fully decentralized. It's still in the win category.
You know when the FBI went to Apple and was like, hey, let us through the back door of this person's phone, and Apple was like, no, F off.
Yeah.
I hope that's what USDC does for its holders. As in, like, somebody comes in and say, hey, blacklist this address, and USDC is like, give me a court order to do that, right?
Let's talk about the reason Apple does that, because if they don't, people abandon the iPhone. It's bad for shareholders. People abandon the iPhone. If USDC does start blacklisting, guess what? We abandon we abandon it in a heartbeat, right? Trade my USDC for some ETH. It's easy on Uniswap. See you later. Or another stablecoin that doesn't do that. See, now the bankers are playing in our world, in our game.
Market forces.
Yeah. If they adopt crypto protocols, they adopt crypto values. That is the back door here. That's what Dave and I believe anyway. We got another question here. This one is from Sneak Up.
Yeah. Can you clearly differentiate ZK and optimistic rollups and the different narratives they hold? Oh, that clearly prefix is doing a lot of work here.
Yeah.
So optimistic rollups, think of them as a fractal off of Ethereum. They are Ethereum, but as a layer two. They do everything that Ethereum does, and they settle down to Ethereum. Ethereum as a layer two. A ZK rollup is Ethereum with zero knowledge cryptography as a layer two. Man, getting to the nuances of this is actually pretty hard. Think of Ethereum with 10x better cryptography and compression and faster and cheaper fees that allow you to have so much computational resource that the limitations for putting almost anything on chain are basically gone. And so, for example, you will see Web3 games on an optimistic rollup like Arbitrum or Optimism. And what that means is that there are games that have assets inside of them. On ZK rollups, you will have fully on-chain games where the game engines and game logic themselves are actually smart contracts. That is perhaps one way to illustrate this. That's all I got, Ryan.
That makes sense. I think if you are a bankless listener and you want to go down the crypto rabbit hole a little bit. And when I say crypto, I mean cryptography.
Right.
Go check out an episode we did probably, I don't know, a year and a half ago, maybe longer, David, with Justin Drake. It's called Moon Math.
Okay.
And that, I think, is the philosophy around this. What David was saying is there are two types of ways to sort of scale things in crypto. One is economic games that we can play, like fraud proofs. This is what optimistic technology does. And the other is pure math, pure moon math, pure cryptography. And that is what ZK rollups do. Anyway, if you want some more context for that you'll find it there. But ZK technology is kind of the moon math equivalent way where we get all of the crypto economic guarantees, but through cryptography rather than having to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
David, we got some takes of the week. Let's read this first one. What's this?
Jim, I'm going to skip the first part of this tweet. Jim tweets out, banks are sovereign rollups that post data availability to the Fed. I think that's a great take. I think it's a great take. Okay, sovereign rollups, as in they control their own ledger. A bank is a sovereign rollup. It has control over its own ledger and that it posts data availability to the Fed. So it takes the state of that ledger and tells the Fed about it. That is a sovereign rollup with data availability posting to the Fed.
And it actually works out quite literally. We were talking earlier about FedNow technology, which is basically a big settlement chain. That is the chain through which these bank sovereign rollup ledgers actually post to. They post back to FedNow.
Right.
It's accurate. Mm-hmm. David, this is a tweet from you. The crypto class of 21 and 22 have really earned their stripes. God, I'll say.
Yeah.
We have, haven't we?
Yeah. 3 Arrows Capital liquidation, Voyager, Celsius, FTX, a bank crisis of our banks, the banks that we actually care about, now Euler. Man, like in the first half of 2022, I was like, man, these kids got it easy.
Yep.
And then the second half of 2022 came and like, oh man, these guys got it rough.
Totally.
And so I follow up this with this tweet saying, in 2025, when you're all millionaires, they will say that you got lucky. Remember what it took to get to there. You know?
Nice tweet. Not financial advice.
Not financial advice. I don't know. I don't know how that's financial advice, but it probably is somehow. Ryan Sean Adams tweets out a whole bunch. God, We just have podcasts. We just read our own tweets. We should do more of these. A whole bunch of tech entrepreneurs and builders just learned why we need crypto. I wonder what they're going to do next. What do you mean by this, Ryan?
I do think that's part of the narrative shift that we're seeing here is like you have the startup bank of the United States, of Silicon Valley, basically. Mm-hmm. And all of the founders of all of these startups just got temporarily unbanked and then permanently unbanked. Didn't know whether they were going to get rug pulled or not. From all of their, like, what they have to stop and think. These are builders. These are engineers. These are people who want to create a different world and have the skills and talent to actually do that. I think some of them, some portion of that population probably got crypto-pilled last weekend.
Yeah.
And maybe some portion of them will understand why we're here, why crypto exists in the first place, and will use some of those skills to help us build out this crypto future. That's what I mean. This is when you learn, right? When PayPal locks you up. Remember Paul Krugman last week? He was like, he didn't say, now I understand crypto. He got locked out of PayPal, though. Mm-hmm. Now he knows what the use case is. He's probably going to consider that the next time he assesses what we're trying to do here with uncensorable financial transactions and the value of that.
Bullish.
There we go. Speaking of bullish, David, what are you bullish on, man?
I am bullish, Ryan, on layer twos. but here's what I mean by that. Arbitrum finally releases token. It's like the most anticipated airdrop of all time. In 1 hour from right now, I don't know why I'm saying this. 1 hour from right now, Ryan, you and I are live streaming with the Arbitrum team. So all the listeners, that is already live and available for you to go consume. OP Stack already has two major chains. Coinbase is building on the OP Stack. We have two ZK EVMs launching in the next 10 days. We haven't even talked about that.
Do people know about that? Do they remember that? Two in 10 days.
Yes. Yeah. Mainnet. ZK EVM mainnets. We haven't even talked about it. Everyone's focused on the Arbitrum airdrop. People are forgetting about the ZK EVM are getting launched. And those are going to have tokens too, by the way. Well, one of them is Polygon, so that token already exists. There's also some alpha, an embargoed thing that I'm recording tomorrow.
Don't say that.
Will be released on Monday about layer twos. So that's happening. Like, man, all of the innovation is happening in layer twos. Like, we said layer two summer was going to happen in, when did we say that? 2022?
2021, I think we called the first layer two summer.
And then 2022.
we called the second one.
Here we are.
But we're calling it for 2023. It's going to be layer two.
It is currently happening. We are in, this is what layer two summer looks like.
Yeah.
Perhaps 2 years late. Sorry. But here we are. I'm bullish on layer twos.
Yeah, it's super bullish. I think it's played out how we hoped it might. And do you remember that episode we did about the modular blockchain thesis?
Yeah.
That was a while ago, but it's playing out that way.
Cool. What are you bullish on, Ryan?
David, I am bullish on regulators that do their jobs.
Oh, how many are there?
Let me introduce you to Hester Peirce. All right, she is an SEC commissioner and the antithesis of Gary Gensler. You know, it occurred to me when Bankless put out this tweet. I was like, we spend a lot of time on Gary Gensler in our roll-ups and our content and just his crypto. We really do spend too much time on him. I want to take a minute to just thank regulators who are actually doing their job. Hester Peirce is one of them. She is a certified American badass. She is principled. She is smart. She's willing to engage the crypto community, and we are lucky to have her. I'm thankful for this person. That was, I think, re-echoed to me as we had this interview. We had a conversation with her earlier in this week. That episode is going to come out on Monday.
It's already out for citizens.
She just calls it like it is.
Yeah.
She's very honest. We asked her questions like, what is a security? She's like, you know, I don't know, and I don't think the SEC has done a good job actually communicating with any clarity on this. Right?
Sorry, I know this is what you're excited about.
No, say it.
She said that the SEC is primarily interested in increasing its jurisdictional reach.
Yes.
She just said it how it was.
Flat out said it. She said, focused on that rather than what they should be focused on, which is principles. And I just want to be thankful for regulators that are actually doing their job. And this is a broader thing that I think is important for us to realize. In the United States, and I think across the world, there is a growing frustrated majority that just wants everyone else to behave like grownups, right? Stop playing the power games and like, let's actually build something for the future. Let's actually build something we care about. Hester in the conversation described a scenario, which it just seems so simple, but In some way, it was also a utopia of just like the crypto community and regulators coming together and having a conversation about about a new asset class and how this should be governed and regulated moving to the futures. and what parts were really decentralized, what parts were centralized, where the scammers and bad actors were, and how regulators could go side by side in the crypto industry and move this technology of freedom forward. Wow, that can actually happen. And I think there is a majority of people who are sick of our institutions mm-hmm. failing us, sick of the power games, want to get back to like building a productive society. And so I'm just happy and bullish that people like this exist. I'm thankful for our good regulators. They don't get enough credit, and I think they should.
Yeah, 100%. As much as people like Gary Gensler make us lose our faith in humanity, people like Hester Peirce build it right back.
There you go. Meme of the week, David, what are we looking at?
Meme of the week. This is from CMS Holdings. Do Kwon makes Basis Cash. And 17 dominoes later, the U.S. banking sector needs a bailout. Thanks, Do.
That was his original stablecoin, by the way. Fun fact, mm-hmm. if you didn't realize that.
Yeah, that was the one domino before Terra Luna.
Absolutely. Guys, we got to end it here. None of this has been financial advice. It never is. Got to reemphasize that crypto is risky. So is DeFi. You could lose what you put in. The banking system's kind of risky, though, too. But we are headed west.
Everything is risky.
It's all risky. This is the journey that we're on. It's the bankless journey, and we're glad you're with us today. Thanks so much.